Welcome to Gorgeous Reads on Radio Gorgeous, in association with the books page of Sainsbury's Magazine. For more information, go to sainsburysmagazine.co.uk.
Sarah Pascoe, welcome to Radio Gorgeous.
Hello.
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 Hello. You're an animal.
Yes, we all are, apparently. Yes, I claim. Yes, you're an animal in particular.
Well, I'm relieved to hear you say so.
Yes.
It sort of elevates women to the level of animal that has been afforded men.
Yes, yeah. We're just as gross as they are.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Disgusting, hormone-driven.
Yeah.
Evolutionarily driven.
Yes, yeah. Of course, but very base creatures.
What was the starting point of animal for you?
So the starting point was probably, I did an Edinburgh show in 2014, and I talked a lot about sperm in it, and about sperm selection, sperm competition, the behaviour of sperm, this idea of kamikaze sperm, and what it might mean for female sexuality. And so that was probably a 4 or 5 minute routine. But I kept reading around that topic and the idea of, oh, like female sexuality is an active thing, and then realised that I wanted to write more, but that it wasn't going to be funny. And so if it's not going to be funny, that means I can't do it at work. And then it was like, what are you writing it for then, or what are you researching it for? And then that kind of worked its way into writing a book about women's bodies. Yeah.
Which, one, I loved.
Thank you.
Two, as I'm 49, I'm a bit older than
you.
Recognize my younger self.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Ah.
Three, I've always been passionate about, you know, knowing how our bodies work.
And yes.
Really mad at friend of mine,
yeah.
Friends of mine in their 40s who are like, what do you mean you don't know when you conceive? Like,
yes.
What's wrong with you?
Oh,
it's
wow.
Your body.
Yeah, of
like,
course.
Why don't
you
know?
Yeah. Why aren't you fascinated? Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
Why don't you want to know?
Yeah.
But I am also amazed, you know, especially when I gave birth,
yeah,
how undereducated we are.
Yeah, absolutely. And almost like it's not important, when it feels like the most important thing, the fact that there isn't definitive answers to certain stuff, or how even scientists like, yeah, we just don't know. And I think lots of women have had the experience of going to the doctors about something that might be like hormone or moods or to do with metabolism, and then to go like, yeah, women have weird stuff. We're like, excuse me? Do we? Like, no, we don't. But yeah, it's really odd that there hasn't been much more research and much more attention. My mum would tell you that's because it happens to women. If it happened to men, they'd have solved it. That's my mum's thing, yeah.
Well, I think that's kind of true.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, okay, prostate cancer is a really easy 5 minute test.
Yes.
You know, breast cancer, I have to do it myself,
yes.
By which time I've had it for, you know, over many months.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
That's a difference.
Yes, it is a difference, isn't it? Yeah.
But and also, it's sort of this idea of women's bodies, you know, information on a need to know basis.
Yeah. Yeah,
you don't need to know
all that we're
to get pregnant.
Yeah, or that we're so mysterious, like we probably couldn't handle the information if we knew. Like, yeah,
if we bothered to find out,
yes,
blow your time.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah.
Forever. Well, I have to say that you have an incredible facility with making complicated information. It is complicated.
Yes.
Information.
Yeah. Sometimes. Yeah.
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 One, funny. Two, accessible. I'm going to use one example, the male release, what do you want, reflex or whatever. You know, the ability to hold your orgasm.
Oh, I see.
Release your orgasm.
Oh, yeah.
That is a cultural thing that we assume, oh, they just have no control.
Oh, I see. Yes. Yeah.
And you're like, well, you don't shit everywhere.
No. Yes. Yeah, absolutely. So, yeah, that doesn't make any sense. You can train an animal. You can house train them. Yeah. Yeah. So there should be a similar form of teaching. Yeah.
Yeah. A similar form of teaching. And also, okay, exciting things like I had never, you know, I guess I'm closer to your mother's generation than yours, and also in terms of knowledge.
Oh, yeah.
So this idea of, that's very culturally prevalent, that, you know, men's sex drive drives our sexuality.
Yes. Yeah, we're taught to really respect that as the main thing. That is the thrust, is men and then women are just always like pulling hands off them and tapping them away or cooking them dinner to try and persuade them. Yeah, and we have very much like a beta role. Mm-hmm. Yeah, when they look at any other species of animal, although they've only started looking at it this way, they realise that women are always they're always the signaller. They're always the one going, now, I can get pregnant now. Mm-hmm. No, yeah. Not now. Yes, yeah. So it's kind of absurd.
And that I was so excited by, well, I guess you were, the concept that there were kamikaze sperm.
Yes, the fact that exists in nature. And all the different kinds. So obviously kamikaze is an ape thing, but in other animals, the sperm do incredible things. Like there's sperm that form a plug that fills the female's vagina up so another sperm can get in. There's all these other different defense mechanisms. Yeah, incredible to think about. Yeah.
And the reason why the defense mechanisms are there is because of female desire.
Yes, and multi-partnering. Yeah,
exactly. You ain't all that. We're not just sitting around laying around waiting for you.
Yeah, but I mean, it's quite effective that we have convinced men for hundreds of years that no, you go to work. I'm just gonna. I'll be here when you get back.
I got time. Around.
Yeah, exactly. There's some really lovely. I tried not to get too swayed with non-human animals in the book, but there's some really interesting studies with birds. So that all these different species of birds, they always thought were monogamous because they hadn't watched them for very long, and then what they would watch like this little kind of finch, and it's a really interesting study, and they realize that she would like, they seem very monogamous, and they go out with their little boy bird and they're like getting, and then she just goes around the bush, has sex with another male and comes back again as if she was just walking around. They go like, women got game. Yeah, girls
just
got game.
Just go on looking for worms.
Yeah, just gonna see if there's any berries on the other side.
Nothing to see here.
Yeah,
getting some on the side.
Yeah, getting some, coming back, and that's how you have good babies.
There you go. Yeah. So it's all for the good babies.
Yes, yeah.
RadioGorgeous.com.
Well, so one of the other starting points for the book, which again recognized myself there, is the utter self-loathing that we have towards our bodies.
Yeah. Yeah, and also, and I don't have a definitive answer of exactly where it comes from, and it helps me to think about evolution and your body as an advertisement of youth and fertility and wealth and resources and certain things. But also, how that limits the rest of our behaviour. Because in one sense, you kind of go like, it's just vain, it's just stupid. It doesn't matter what my hair or my clothes look like or how I feel. But then you realise that when you feel no confidence, you're crushed. You can't do anything. You don't want to talk, you don't want to write, you don't want to communicate. You wouldn't get up at a business meeting. You wouldn't say you had an idea or an invention. It crushes everything. So it is also important. So it's about trying to balance the two things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, because you can't just say, it doesn't matter.
No, it doesn't.
Which we'd like to say it doesn't matter.
Yes, you'd like to go, hey, who cares? I mean, to say to like young girl children, it doesn't matter that you feel ugly. It would have huge ramifications in the rest of their lives unless they can find a way to be happy with who they are. Yeah.
Yeah. Somehow
so
we
they
have
are connected.
They are connected because I definitely know there are things I didn't do.
Yeah.
Well, clearly there are things I didn't do because if I, like you, spent however many man hours or woman hours thinking about, worrying about self-torturing about, loathing, dreaming about, dieting, exercising, on that one area.
Yeah, yeah, we weaken ourselves. And then you think, what I could have done. Yeah.
How many video games I could have wasted
instead. Yeah, absolutely.
But
yes,
exactly, what I could have done in
yes,
that time.
All those hours, yeah.
All that time.
Yeah. And if it was something else, if it was something that was more visibly unhealthy, like, I smoke for 2 hours a day, then everyone would notice that was a huge problem. But there's something very invisible about it as well, isn't there? That people can kind of hide that self-hatred. And sometimes, and it's an interesting thing to think about how with our friends we all accept this thing of like that we put ourselves down. And I put you up, but I put myself down. And we go around in a circle and we don't change it and go, this is crazy, what is wrong with us?
Yeah.
How do we stop this? This has to stop. Our daughters, our nieces, they can't have this. They need to just feel brilliant about themselves. Yeah.
As well as it's also become normalized behavior.
Yes. Yeah.
And stereotyped behavior.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's completely accepted. Are you feeling fat?
Yes. Yeah.
Today.
Yeah.
It's one of your fat days.
Yeah. yeah, we're already like already ready to sort of to reassure each other. And also how strange it is when a woman doesn't feel like that. I know that I've got a couple of friends, and I have two of them, who are very confident about their bodies, and other people cannot deal with it. And because and they both go like, I can never tell anyone. Like, I just love what I look like. I mean, I hate my face. but yeah, and so that's an interesting thing as well. Or
that it's become a dirty secret.
Yeah, yes. That you can't just be like, confident. Oh God, I just join in. I don't feel like this at all. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
I do find that shocking.
Oh no, you just feel like, yeah, like wow.
Universal.
Yes, yeah. Yeah.
So there is freedom from that.
Yes, there is.
Excellent. Yeah. All right, how do you find that?
I have no idea. That's the next thing. We'll have to work it out.
What was the most exciting thing you discovered in doing the research?
I thought it was very exciting to find out about the accelerator and brake of female response. For me, was really mind-blowing. So I'll just describe it. So basically, a lot of the time when women or men have a sexual dysfunction or disinterest in sex or a lower sex drive, we then try and add more accelerators, things that turn you on. So women are told, get a vibrator, masturbate more, do more of this, look at pornography, buy tiny underwear. And oftentimes, if you've got a lower sex drive, you don't want sex very much, it's because of breaks. And that could be chemical, it could be depression, it could be usually low confidence and not feeling very comfortable about your body, or your partner not making you feel very good about your body. That can be a huge turn off. And so when women are looking to enjoy sex more, it can be much more about taking away breaks than it is about adding accelerators. And I thought that for me just turned everything upside down, that's how we should always be talking about sex. What didn't you like? What can I take away to make this better for you? How can you be more relaxed, more confident, happier? What do you need? But that isn't just go to Victoria's Secret and spend money you can't afford on a credit card.
Well, and also something you're not doing.
Yes, yeah,
as
of course.
As opposed to something not happening for you.
Yes, yes.
Something not being provided
for you. Yes. And especially when it's with a partner, whether that's long-term or a shorter thing, knowing what people to ask people not to do or to ask them for rather than you're supposed to be providing. Yeah.
My weekday fix? Darling, it has to be Radio Gorgeous.
No. And I think it can make you feel quite lonely as well, because then what you end up having is kind of poor quality sex. So you're not even connecting to your partner. It's not the things it's supposed to be. I think that's something that everyone in a relationship probably has to work on at times.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yes. Well, especially when the pressures of life come to bear, or one person, you're busy lives.
Yeah, absolutely.
You travel a lot.
Yes,
Having kids.
Yeah.
I remember saying to my husband, something had happened. He's like, I'll get you tomorrow. I'm like, don't you understand? From now on, there is no tomorrow.
Yes, yeah.
Tomorrow doesn't exist. You have no idea what's going to happen tomorrow.
No.
That kid's never going to sleep again.
Yeah.
Today, that's what we have. Today. I also might not like you very much tomorrow.
Mm.
Pretty much.
Yeah. This is a very small window.
Yeah, exactly. That was it.
Yeah.
You blew it. The word tomorrow blew it.
Yes. You're gone. Yeah.
It's gone. Okay. One thing, because I need to get you on some other topics, like you need to write other books.
Okay.
And there needs to be the Sarah Pasco school curriculum.
Oh, yeah.
That's what I'm thinking.
Yeah.
This year. So, so one of the things we talked about already is male ejaculation being like, this is an unstoppable force.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Which also goes to consent.
Yes. Yeah.
And Chad Evans was just, which you mentioned in the book.
Yeah, just out of date on that one.
Yeah, exactly.
Just out of date on Chad Evans.
Well, yeah, except, but it's just come.
Yes.
He was,
conviction
was found.
Yes.
Tell me what your thoughts are on that. I want to talk about consent in general, because I think it's so important.
Yeah, really, really important. And the one thing I wanted to make really clear when I was talking about it is I don't have a definitive answer. I think the reason you have courts and trials of things because you will always need a group of your peers to decide. Chad Evans is one of the greyest areas I think anyone could imagine, and that's why I use it as an example. It wasn't because, I mean, I could have chosen much more harrowing cases and much more upsetting ones, but they'd have been much clearer. I think the Chad Evans one, what I found so interesting was that every single person I spoke to had a different take on it. That if they had been the judge, there would have been a different result. And that would have gone from chemical castration all the way to, what? Why was there even a trial? Really, really fascinating. And I think probably very, very upsetting for the girl involved as well, because she, in exactly the same way, what has happened to her and how she copes with that doesn't have a precedent. And I think with the, not just with date rape drugs and the different kind of drugs that people can either take willingly or unwillingly or unknowingly, but also the effect of alcohol on people not realising that you can black out and you can lose memories, or you can seem like you're functioning when you're not, to the person speaking with you doesn't. All of that kind of stuff now has to be part of teaching young people, because I do think also that boys cannot understand why a girl might be very upset in the morning to something she seemed to agree to.
Yes.
Yeah, so I think that's part of it as well. And that's not victim blaming. That's trying to prevent victims, I think.
And I would say that clearly a lot of people think Chet Evans is the victim here.
Yeah, but I do believe he is genuinely upset. So in a way,
he is.
And also with all of these kind of people, when you have to remember that they're very young boys and they grew up in a very, very masculinized culture where they are actively taught not to respect women in their treatment with them. They don't have managers and lots of people around them just being like, just be aware. And I think these very testosterone-y, adrenaline-y jobs, which kind of can make you a bit psychopathic, sociopathic. You need a lot of hits. You need to keep feeling alive. And sometimes they're using other people or drugs for those reasons. And that's a whole other complex area. Because I don't know, if I had a son and he became a professional footballer, but by the time he got to 15 or 16, I'd be really worried about the influences that were around and what they were being told is okay because you're a successful sportsman.
Radio Gorgeous, online, on your phone, on a podcast, or on your tablet. Listen anywhere, anytime.
I do have a son.
Yeah.
And I am worried about that anyway.
Yeah, just in general.
He shows no signs of being a footballer.
Yeah. But, yeah. So how old is your son?
He's 11.
Okay.
And already, I mean, I think about how we learned about sex.
Yeah.
And I learned about sex from my idiot peers.
Yeah.
And occasionally an older
yes.
sibling.
Yeah.
Who was just as dumb as we were.
Yeah.
Like, seriously, is that who we want?
No. And also what's worse now, because I find so scary about the internet and pornography, is that now I look back, I'm like, oh, at least we learn it like from the dictionary, or we had one word or a little bit, or we kind of added it together piece by piece over years, really, from the literal knowing what the word sex was, or penis and vagina, to actually going like, oh, okay, it took years. Whereas now, I think what I find terrifying is that, your son or my nieces, they can just go on a computer, and so the very first lesson is something that could be very wrong or could sully so I find that side of stuff really, really. And then how do you talk to young people about it without also putting them off? Because the other thing is that you don't want a generation going like, oh, you ruined sex for us by talking to us about it so much when we were nine. And being really great, like, we didn't want to talk to you about
it. You were talking about this sexualized culture and all you did was talk about sex.
You're talking about breaks and underwear and just let me be a kid.
Yeah, I mean, I find it petrifying.
Mm.
And also the fact that we're judgmental about sexting, but then again, that's there.
Yes,
that's...
yeah, and also that things just change, that sometimes things that will feel so alien to us will be really great and healthy for young people, which is that we don't understand that it changes so fast. I guess probably the base thing would be to teach young people, almost treating it a little bit like food, teaching them about urges and not forcing things, but without any sexual language, first of all. So it's much more, you kind of use allegory and things like that. And then they maybe apply sex to that later on, once they already know. You don't put a cake in someone's mouth when they're not hungry.
Yeah.
Yeah. And okay, how do you know when someone's hungry? Yeah, they will tell you. Yeah, we do it that way.
Sarah, that's awesome.
Yeah, we'll do it that way. So that...
Excellent.
Yes, yeah.
So right, the groundwork's there.
Okay,
do now. And what was the most, I imagine you annoyed everyone with all the fun stuff. And
I did. So I was often kind of at gigs, kind of talking about what I'd read that day. And sometimes it was fun stuff, sometimes it was more upsetting. Like, I found all the stuff about child brides really upsetting. It's such a huge problem and you feel so out of control about it. But you also feel like, we should be talking about this. It affects everything. It's hundreds of millions of women in the world. And I consider myself a feminist, yet what I'm fighting seems so silly and unimportant. And you go like, she's not allowed to go to school, she's on her period. I think my boyfriend got the brunt of that kind of like angry breakfast. Exactly. So that was part of it. But I'm lucky because also I got to do, because for my job I get to do like charity gigs, and I met loads of people who work for different kind of charities that either work with women or young women in the world, and that helps me feel like slightly more involved with it, so it doesn't feel completely powerless.
one of the things, I read your book and I was going through a bunch of old papers of mine. And one I was saying, you know, I very much identified with you know, body image and self-loathing. And but also, I was reading in a journal of my 20s and literally, and I wrote it out, like how much sex I had just to sort of get out of the like it was easier. It was easier to have sex than to say no.
Yes. And that sort of thing that it's only when you reflect back on it you think. And also, it's not like I'm going like, oh, it ruined my life. I think it collects little grains of sand. The dislike of yourself, I'm not worth very much. What I want doesn't matter. The person that I'm with doesn't care. Like, I think those things really add up.
That adds up, as do the... That sort of like shellac layers also on your sexuality.
Yes. Oh, yeah, because you're never exploring it or finding out. You're telling it, you're suppressing it, going, you're not important. What you want or what you need, ugh, who cares?
So it builds up those breaks.
Yes, yeah.
But it really does, and you don't realize that, you know, is adding layer and layer onto that.
Yeah, and also then the opposite. Once you start realizing when you're not interested and you start saying no, that then you're doing it the other way. You're going, why would you ever?
Yes, it does. I think you have a nice way of exploring that these things are all connected.
Yeah.
You know, we are an organism.
Yes.
We are connected.
Yeah.
And also
that the private is also part of the public, that if you're not happy in one area of your life, that can be have huge ramifications on how you feel at work, or, that self-worth thing. That does the difference when you're putting your hand up and going, I've got an idea and I'm going to be quiet and let other people solve this. If you can't say no to someone in the bedroom, then,
when it's just the two of you.
Yeah. And I think it does have huge ramifications, even though some people might go like, oh, it's just sex. That's, 5% of your time if you're lucky. But I think it's everything.
It is very important. And important to find language.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. So, because it's not dirty, it's not filthy, it's not even fun, it's just interesting.
Yeah. But no, I think your book goes a long way to helping us find language around
a
very important aspect of our lives.
Yeah. Well, that's good. Thank you.
Thank you, Sarah.
Thank you.
For a review of Sarah Pascoe's Animal, pick up a copy of the May issue of Sainsbury's magazine, out now for just £2. Oh, yeah.